Amika.
Hi, how are you? You made
Fine,
it
everything is
in.
good. All
Good.
right, we did
Yes, thank you so much for being here this evening.
it.
So everyone, welcome back to my podcast series. Welcome to the Winner's Circle. And tonight we will be having Brother Kaba Hiawatha Kemeni as the guest. And he is an educator and he's an author. And we're just going to chat a little bit about sacred geometry and just dive into that and his works, his books that he's written, and just kind of get his opinion on linguistics and how things are broken down and just kind of some enlightenment for us in the community. So thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm doing fine, my sister Tamika. Thank you for inviting me and to all of the guests that are out here. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes. All right, so we can get into it. I was following Kaba Kemeni on Instagram, and I also know him from the Hidden Colors docuseries, all of those documentaries. And I thought it would be good to have him on the episode just talking about the things I mentioned, but also he has a lot of knowledge to share. And I feel like we are in a time that a lot of our history, a lot of our information, specifically to us as Black people, melanated people, I don't know, it's a season of like preservation. And I feel like whenever you come across someone who has a lot of knowledge and wisdom to share, it's good to hear from them. So I guess we can start off. Do you want to talk a little bit about your books and how you were an author? And what kind of how did you get into writing the books? Like, what kind of prompted you to write some of those books that you have out?
Absolutely. Opportunity, my sister Tamika.
Mm-hmm.
For those that may not know my background, just to give you a sense, I am a retired New York City Board of Education teacher. And I taught in South Central Bronx for 31 years. I taught in the Bronx from October of 1979 until July of 2009. I've also taught high school. In fact, I've taught high school in Rikers Island. And I've also taught college and also postdoctorate students.
Right.
My point, Sister Tamika, and to those listening, is that I've taught every grade and I've taught every subject. And I've been exposed to our children in particular, but all children in general. I've had students of all different cultural backgrounds in my class. And one of the things is we as a people, as an African American people, as an African people, we don't suffer from an achievement gap. We suffer from an opportunity gap. Because in my experiences, when you have given a child of African descent, whether they speak English, Spanish, French, Dutch, Portuguese, and I've had all of them in my class one way or another. When you're giving them exposure and opportunity, they can not only succeed, they can excel.
Right.
It is the opportunities. I'll give you an example. I was in a school that had more than 250 students. In their computer laboratory, they had 12 laptops.
Wow.
Eight needed to be serviced.
Oh my goodness, not enough resources.
Absolutely, opportunity. Because I've been in affluent schools where every child walks into the school with a laptop. And when they go into classrooms, they don't go into classrooms that we know, they go into computer labs. And they're in social studies class. And they'll connect their laptop to their terminal. The teacher will upload the chapter to be read. The children will download it. They'll read it. At the end of the period, give or take, they'll take a test. They'll press a button. The test will go automatically to the teacher's roster. It'll be graded and averaged right then and there. It's an opportunity gap.
Yeah.
We are teaching our children, for instance. Many of us are teaching our children. And one of the things the pandemic showed was the fact of how many children do not have access to the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And it goes according to communities. And that's just something that came out that we know. We've known it all the time.
Right.
But it's just not something that there. So what I'd like to have us understand through my years of experience, and I purposely stayed in the same community. I never moved.
Right.
Because I wanted to be able to track the progress of the children. So when I retired, there were children who were my kindergarten children who were now parents.
Yeah.
Because tracking is very important. What happens a lot of times with a lot of different jobs in general, but in education when it happens, is that if you move around a lot, you never really get grounded in the community. You never can follow the progress of the students. I follow children to middle school, to high school, to college, to getting a job, to writing a reference for children who were in my second grade for a job that they wanted to go for. So this is the value that I bring to the community. I have been and I remain on the front lines.
Right.
And so as I the books that I've written, one book is Professor William Leo Hansberry. I was advised by my teacher, Professor John Henry Clark, because of my work, I write curriculum. And Dr. Clark used to always say, okay, he would tell us and he would talk to us and he would teach us. And one day I said to Dr. Clark, I said, how do you think I can best serve the community? What do you think I can best do?
Right.
And he said, Booker T, because at the time I hadn't corrected my name. I was born Booker Taliaferro Coleman Jr. And he said, Booker T, we'll have people with a lot of money. We'll have a lot of people who are principals of schools. We'll have a lot of everything, but the one thing we don't have is a curriculum.
Right.
Once you get the child into the school, now what do you tell them? And so I began my specialty as a curriculum writer. And then I became a staff developer and a community developer and a parent developer. Those are three different ways to present information.
Right.
The way in which I would talk to a teacher, even an administrator, is different.
Right. I was going to say I can relate to that now in my role as a school administrator, especially that parent and community outreach.
Oh, yeah.
And how that language is different and those perspectives that you, the feedback you get is different too.
Absolutely. Sister Tamika, with our children, our biological children, my wife and I have three children. And one of the things I always told my children is don't tell your teacher that I'm an assistant principal or that I'm a college professor or that I'm a teacher. Don't tell them that.
Right.
Because many times they'll treat you differently. When I say you, I mean me.
Right.
And again, the child also. But the idea is that I wanted them to talk to me like I was a parent.
Right.
I wanted them to tell me what they felt I could do to help my child, to enhance whatever she or he was going through in terms of education.
Right.
Because as you say, my sister Tamika, particularly in your experience, there is a different way. The way in which you teach a teacher is a classroom setting with information and all of the different things that go with it.
Yeah.
The way I would talk to a parent is different because a parent is a support unit for the teacher.
Right.
But at the same time, that the parent is the original teacher of the child, particularly mother. Original teacher.
Yeah.
My children knew from before they even went to school, I was their teacher. Their mother was their teacher.
Yeah.
And I'm sending you to school to socialize, to learn the world, to learn information. But don't think I'm not your teacher.
Right.
And so the way in which it's a very unique relationship that a parent has with a child as it relates to education. And then the community, who does not have a biological investment in the child, but has a sociological investment in the child.
Right.
You know, there are, like I've brought community members in who were drummers and dancers. and we'd have after school programs.
Right.
Where these community members that the children saw all the time, and maybe they already graduated, or maybe they had younger children that weren't in school yet. But it gave the children a chance to see people in the community, and it gave the people in the community a chance to see the children in a different light.
Right.
So the way we talk to them is different. And so in my developing this, Dr. Clark said, you should study the life of the man that really was the first person to introduce an African studies course in an accredited college in the United States. And so in two of my master's degrees, I did my thesis on Professor William Leo Hansberry of Howard University.
Okay.
And I call him the architect of America's African Studies program.
Right. It had to begin somewhere here.
Yes. And I specifically is saying, Sister Tamika, accredited college. Because I don't want to get it twisted that we didn't teach our history and culture when we were on the plantation.
Right.
That we did not teach it in the little red schoolhouse. I'm speaking specifically in an accredited college because something that we found out in our research is that you never were introduced to African American history. There was no course dedicated to that.
Right.
And when you were introduced to it, you learned it through American history.
Right, and only in one lens.
Exactly, and as a side note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And sometimes, depending where you were, only at certain times of the year, or one time of the year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the realities that I faced. And so I said, let me, you know, it's African tradition to do libation, to honor those that came before you.
Yeah.
And I knew that I wanted to write a book. Which I'll speak on after I... But in order to do that, I paid homage to my ancestors. I paid what I'm calling an intellectual libation to Professor William Leo Hansberry. Because it is because of him that much of what I do. And if you're in a Black Studies program, if you're interested in the Black Studies department, if you're interested in studying Black history in February, Carter G. Woodson and William Leo Hansberry were colleagues together at Howard University. And so the first book was on William Leo Hansberry to explore what he had to do. And, you know, my sister Tamika, when I studied what he had to do, it gave me such strength to do what I'm doing because I realized I have no right to complain.
I was going to say a lot of our ancestors who are, I'm looking right now, his time in the 1930s, a lot of our ancestors in during that time frame and all of the work that they did just to put us in the forefront for certain, depending what was going on or just for certain things like how he's doing initiatives, they really did overcome a lot of hurdles. And it is definitely something to be honored because a lot of them didn't have a blueprint of someone before them.
That's exactly right. Because in my research, I went to Professor William Leo Hansberry's home in Washington, D.C. His daughters allowed me to go into his files and his library.
Oh, that's
and
I, so nice.
And I came upon graphs, lithographs, maps that were created by him and his students.
Wow.
Never before existed. But through his thorough research, he was able to create maps of Ethiopia. Of Africa that had never been seen before, Much of what we're experiencing today, others who followed him took it to the next level. So we may not know, we may be giving credit to one person, but the person that inspired that person was William Leo Hansberry.
Right.
And so I felt that a libation to this great man was necessary.
Yeah.
It is not the final story of his life.
Right.
I wrote the story as a libation for us to at least know who he was.
Yeah.
To know his development. So I followed his life in many different ways so that we could, and as you said earlier, in terms of what it is that we have to do, I believe that we must rescue, we must research, and we must restore African glory.
Yeah.
Our African legacy. But we have to rescue it. And when I say rescue it, I don't mean to take it from someone that's hiding it. I'm saying we go out and do the research necessary to find it.
Right.
It's there. And the work that I'm doing in my quibinars and my webinars is evidence that it's there, but you just got to look for it. And you've got to align yourself with people who have like minds. Because so much of what I have learned, I've learned through chats with friends and other scholars that are in this area, my elders that have gone before me. A lot of where I'm headed, Sister Tamika, comes out of that experience.
Right. But
the book I wanted to write, was my third book, Shabaka's Stone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I set out to write, which is an African theory on the origin and continuing development of the cosmic universe.
Right.
In these days and times, Sister Tamika, we're facing a lot of different situations.
Yeah.
And the very first thing that we have to do before we unite ourselves with anything outside of ourselves, we have to unite ourselves with ourselves.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that our ancestors understood a fundamental principle, and that each and every human being is the creator having a human experience.
Right. Right.
And that how we treat each other is how we treat the Creator.
Right.
So on one level, we're talking about how much we love the Creator, God, Allah, Yahweh, however you want to call the name of the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we defile nature, and we disrespect our men, we disrespect each other.
Right.
And yet we claim to love God.
Right.
And children, of course. And so I wanted to get that message across, but I wanted to get across what I call the pattern and the taboo.
Mm-hmm.
As above, so below.
Yeah.
That just as things evolved in the heavens, so did they evolve in our solar system, and our solar system evolved us. There's a pattern.
Right.
And that when you learn the pattern, it then brings you to a point where you can respond to all of the great challenges that you have in your life. It's a very simple process. How the universe came into being, how the cosmos and the universe came into being, is how we came into being, and how we continue to come into being every day of our lives. But to get the fundamental information, you know, when you take in the algebra class, mm-hmm. a lot of times you have to take pre-algebra, take calculus, pre-calc. Well, the prerequisites sometimes are other concepts laid out. And so that's where my second book came.
Okay.
And, you know, I really wanted to write Shabaka's Stone, my third book. That's what I wanted to do. But before I could write Shabaka's Stone, I had to pay homage to my ancestors in libation, which was Professor William Leo Hansberry.
Right.
And then to lay out a critical analysis of some of the major texts of the Kush Kemet, or what's called Egyptian writings.
Right.
That would demonstrate, don't make a difference if you're agnostic, atheist, Buddhist, Christian, Hebrew, Zoroastrian, Rosicrucian, from A to Z. I can show you where your scripture came from Africa, from the walls of Egypt, from the papyri written by the Kush Kemetic priests and priestesses. I can show you where your faith system came from.
Right.
I don't bash no religion, Sister Tamika, because I respect people's belief systems.
Right.
My purpose wasn't to make you... I wouldn't know what religion to tell you. People say, well, brother, what religion are you? Well, I'm African, so I'm them all.
Right.
Because I know my ancestors wrote the documents that your faith systems would come from. So I tell people, I'm not bashing the Bible or the Quran or the five books of Moses or the Rig Veda. I'm not bashing those books.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm highlighting those books. My problem isn't with the book, it's with the interpretations of those books.
Right. Right.
And so Spirituality Before Religions was my second book, and it was subtitled Spirituality is Unseen Science.
Mm-hmm.
Science is Seen Spirituality.
Yeah.
And then, now, I published William Leo Hansberry in 2016. Mm-hmm. I published Spirituality Before Religions in 2019. And then I just published Rock of Stone in 2021.
Right.
And so these are the purposes behind the books that I've written and how I believe that they can bring information to our community. And what I always tell people about the books and about writing, because you asked a question about what mm-hmm. brought me to write these books.
Right.
I started these books before the pandemic.
Right.
I started these books before the former president was installed.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that I've written, Sister Tamika, is almost a premonition of what was to come.
Right.
The books that I wrote were done for the times that we're living in right now.
Right. And they came out in time when they needed to come out.
That's right.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, just listening to you talk about what each one is about and what the message was for each book and the work put in for each book. I feel that they're all interconnected, you know, like honoring Professor William Leo Hansberry and getting to see up close and personal, like his own research and the work that he put in and tracking and graphs and things that he came up with and developed kind of had you like honoring him in a spiritual way because he is an ancestor, but also at the same time, you know, it led to that spirituality before religion, mm-hmm. tapping into yourself a little bit more to know your, you know, tapping into your source mm-hmm. and then leading into Shabaka Stone. That's what I got from it. I don't know if that was your thought process behind it too, but that's kind of like the connection I made with the books and just when they were released. Yeah. And I think it's important that that our people in our community have, I feel like, a connection from those three different lenses or those three different point of views, all kind of tying back to our African ancient history as like a foundation in a sense.
Absolutely. And you see, my sister Tamika, what's also very important, because children, mm-hmm. as they probably have asked you, and they've asked me,
yeah,
why do I need to know the past?
Yeah. My kids ask me all the time.
yeah. You know, like, why do I need to know this? And what I do is I took my grandson and we went shopping, you know, and he was into Nerfs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a Nerf slingshot. And I tell this story. I called it the slingshot.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I could get children's attention because they saw the Nerf and they love that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking to them on their level where they can understand. And what I did is I explained to them, I literally explained to them by using the Nerf slingshot. And I explained to them that in a slingshot, you put something in the sling itself and you pull it back.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why you're pulling it back is not to stay there.
Right.
The reason why you're pulling it back is because you want to project it forward.
Right.
And there is a dynamic law of physics that says the further back I pull it, the further in front of me I'm going to project it.
Mm.
And so I explain understanding the past, understanding our history, the way right. I do a slingshot. Let me take your mind, and I like to put it in a sling. Mm-hmm. And I want... Because the further I pull your mind back in history,
right.
the further I can propel you into your future.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking you back there to stay there.
Right.
No more than you use a slingshot just to pull it back and stay there. I'm taking you back there to project you into your future so that you can understand. Because I've often said that prophets are not psychics. They're just good historians.
Right.
Because when you know what happened in the past, you can interpret what's happening in the present and you can predict what's about to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks, wow, psychically, man, you must have been in touch with the Twilight Zone. No, it had nothing to do with the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
History does not repeat itself.
Right.
Mark Twain said, but it certainly does rhyme. What we're going through right now, Sister Tamika, we've been through this before. We've been through this as a people so many times. What we're experiencing right now in 2021 with everything that's going on, particularly with the political backlash that we're experiencing, this is the result of peoples of European descent not handling their business in 1865 after the Civil War.
Right.
Because they did not address the problems of the Confederacy, white supremacy, white fragility, whatever you want to call it. Because they did not handle their business back then, and them allowing for Reconstruction to end and Jim Crow to start and the black laws and sharecropping and all the rest, because they did not handle their business back then, this is what we're experiencing now. And if they don't, see, this ain't our problem, Sister Tamika.
Right.
We're in the middle of it, in the middle of everything that happens in America, because we are the center of the existence of America.
Yeah.
So we're in the middle of it. But this is not our fight. This is the Hatfields and the McCoys fighting right now. This is that ancient warfare that was going on in the ice of Europe that they brought back on the world that now is in America and parts of Europe. And so as an African people, we have to know who we are. We have to understand how great we are.
Right.
And all the great things that we have potentially. But we have to do this. We have to do this.
Right.
I don't depend on anybody. This is why I write my own curricula. I do my quibinars every Tuesday. A quibinar comes.
Right. Yeah, I've been
that, that quibinar is educational methodology. I'm dealing with multiple intelligence, Bloom's taxonomy. I'm dealing with different types of minds, five different minds. I'm dealing with research. From psychologists, psychiatrists, African-centered, such as Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, Dr. Bobby E. Wright. I'm going through all of them to ground us in our own understanding of our psychology. And to understand psychology does not mean study of the mind. Saku is a Kush Kemetic word that means soul. Psychology is the study of the soul, not the study of the mind. There is an interrelationship between the two,
right?
But the actual process of psychoanalysis is the analysis of your soul.
Right.
Soul is the manifestation of your spiritual intuition.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that before too, that part of it.
And these are the kinds of things that we have got to bring to our community. Now, my webinars, I do two different types of webinars. I do a webinar on the first Sunday of the month, which takes a different chapter of my book on Shabakistan and lays it out. And then the third Friday of every month, like this past Friday, because there's a lot of discussion on who the original Americans are.
Right, yeah.
A lot of conversation, like going back and forth, okay? And what I wanted to do was to take my latest research and to tap into the great minds that have gone before me, like Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. And we have a brother, Nasser Ali. We have R. Umar S. Bey.
Right.
And the David Imhotep, who wrote the book, The First Americans Were African. And I just want to lay it out for our people because, you know, my sister Tamika, there are people that will say that slavery never happened.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it did happen. It was a different wave of Africans that came to this country. Right. So when I hear Africans say, well, we were here before that, they're right too. We were. We were the first people that came to America, the Twa Mbuti, the short-statured people that are derogatorily called pygmies. They were the first people here. About 100 to 120,000 years ago, they were here. They peopled the planet, But they were here. And then came the Clovis Folsom people, another African people, the Algonquin people, which reflect another African branch of our family. Mm-hmm. But then came the Inuit, who we derogatorily call Eskimo, and the Asian, who came during the Asian invasions.
Right.
But the people that today are called Native Americans, they're not the original people. They are a combination of all five migrations.
Mm.
But they're not the original people. The people that came here did not look like them.
Right.
They don't like to hear that, but science is science.
Right.
And when you break it down that way, you know, we understand that. So the webinar series is meant to bring out this information, to show visuals. I want to show you what the first Americans looked like. I want to show you how they lived. I want to show you the mounds, the pyramids that they built. I want to show you the life systems that they had. I want to show you the interrelationships between the people so that we can get a sense of who we are. And what I'm saying, my sister Tamika, is that you very well probably have in you not just the Africans that came via the enslavement process, but you also have the blood of the original Americans that were here.
Right.
We all very well could have that blood, and chances are we do.
Right. Yeah, a lot of this information, too, isn't something that is willingly shared in the school curriculum or even at your local library. Like, a lot of this information, you do have to really dig up and research. But it does go back to that rescue part you had mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So we can know, like, what this really is and what this means for us as a people.
Yes, absolutely.
And you see, that message.
And that message is loud and clear because, you see, my sister Tamika, I am willing to work with any organization or school that wants this, but I'm not sending my resume around to school systems.
Right.
That's why I'm doing this on the webinars and the webinar.
Right.
I'm very good at what I do, and I don't need their validation.
Right, because that's what it would turn into, is their validation based on their curriculum. And we know, though, like from the African curriculum, it's more based on, I guess, like yourself and how you are with other people, you know, versus what's on paper and a standard in a sense, or what they would consider a standard for some form of validation.
If I were them, I wouldn't want me to know this either.
Yeah. Because you definitely would demand more if you know your history and you know where you come from, and you know, you would demand more, and that's something that they don't want.
And Sister Tamika, you would also assume your own power,
right?
Okay, because education, this is what Dr. Clark used to always say, the end result of all speech to empower the learner,
right?
And if it's not empowering the learner, it's not education.
Right.
And I've always believed that ever since he told me. I was young when he told me that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been searching, how does this empower me?
Right.
And when I'm reading about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, ain't nothing empowering me. Nothing empowers an African-American child the way they teach American history.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing empowering about that.
Not empowering. Empower. To empower you. To give you that power. Why should they give us the power to become greater than them?
Right.
We'd have to be out of our minds to think. Now, I know all around the country there are different ways that this could be said, but I come from New York. And I know that my experiences with some of the teachers travel from Long Island to come to the Bronx.
Right.
It took them an hour and a half. On a good day, on a good traffic day, this ain't even on bad traffic.
Oh, I can imagine.
It took an hour and a half for them to leave their community, to come into my community, to educate my children.
Right.
Do you think, I think, that when you dropped your children off in those private schools in your community, that you were going to come into my community and teach my children better than the way in which you were paying all that money for your children?
No.
I don't think so. Because if that were the case, if you were going to do that good a job, you'd have brought your child with you.
Right. Well, you know, it's so funny because I've seen it just as a parent, like with my own kids over their years, you know, going through school, public school. They've had teachers come from the suburbs or Long Island or just other parts of the state that are, quote unquote, better off than Brooklyn, where we are in Brooklyn. And there is a difference in how they talk to the children and teach them, and then versus how they would interact with their own children, or, you know, why wouldn't they send their child here to school with these children? Or, you know, there's always some reservation or like hesitation. You know, and I've actually asked one of the, my children's teachers years ago, I said, well, you know, why don't you bring your daughter here? Like you work here, it would be convenient and that kind of thing. But she, and but so many ways just kind of let me know that like she wasn't interested. And I just found like, okay, so then how do you really feel about the children that you are teaching at the school who are predominantly Black, you know, in this community? So it does on to what the underlying thoughts are, even if it's not expressed verbally, you can pick up on it in other ways.
Oh, and our children do.
Yeah.
They do, because I've, in numbers of conversations I've had with them through the years, they pick it up. I you know, and when you said that, my sister Tamika, I thought about when like bring your child to, bring your daughter to school was first starting out years ago in the system. And when a parent, for whatever reason, a teacher had to bring their daughter or son to school with them. Maybe babysitter wasn't there, maybe their school was off.
Right.
You know, and they would bring their children in, just the way in which they addressed their students. And yet how their attitude would just change when they're talking to their own.
Yeah.
The level of respect changes. The respect of cordiality changes. Not all of them. Not all of them. And I don't speak in absolutes.
Right.
But as a group, I'm speaking.
Right.
And I have the right to speak as a group how they act.
Right.
I don't do no blanket statements. I try not to anyway. But the real thing, Sister Tamika, is for us to understand one thing. And if those who are listening to our conversation could get to one thing, if you could start here. You've won. And that is, every morning we ought to wake up, and our proverb should be the first thing we tell ourselves once we wake up, whatever it is, if it is to be, it's up to me.
Right.
Years back, you're familiar, you're speaking from Brooklyn, I'm speaking Bronx. We had a chancellor by the name of Richard Green.
Okay.
He was the first African-American chancellor that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his mantra. If it is to be, in fact, he made t-shirts.
Right.
If it is to be, it's up to me. And that's how I've lived my life. I didn't phrase it like that until I've heard it, developed it. But this is how I see this situation. Right. If we're, if we're spending our time waiting for someone to come save us, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
If it is to be, Sister Tamika, it is up to me. It's up to you. It's up to everyone listening to this program. I don't care how much in reparations they give you. If you don't reconcile what you're dealing with, it don't make a difference how much they give you.
Right.
Reparations, the root word of reparations is to repair. We have to repair ourselves. But before we, you know, Dr. King had a good idea, but that was a few steps ahead. Black folk and white folk ain't gonna get together right now.
Yeah.
Even Black and Black folk ain't gonna get together right now.
That's always been an issue too.
But my sister, the first step in doing any of that is for us to reconcile our own differences within us and to realize that we're born with a Judas and a Messiah within us. Judas's job is to make sure you do not fulfill your divine gift that you've been given by the Creator.
Right.
Judas is the one that is always telling you, oh, you can't make it. You can't do that. You're not qualified. You don't have what it takes. But the Messiah is born in you to ensure Judas fails. Judas will fall 9 times, but the Messiah will rise 10.
Right.
And once we get that in our heads and we realize what our ancestors actually went through, if I, Sister Tamika, when I go to sleep, if I have a dream that I believe I'm having a hard time,
mm-hmm.
I wake up and apologize.
Mm.
Considering what our ancestors went through, I have no right to complain.
Right.
I have a right to be concerned.
Right.
And I have a right to activate a plan to get me out of this. But I praise our ancestors for what they did to get us here. And if they could do what they did in their time, I certainly can do what I need.
Right. I think about that often too. I was just, before logging on, chatting with you, I was watching on YouTube the slave narrative. It was, I think it came out maybe like the late 90s, but it's just a compilation of a few actors and actresses kind of like reliving stories or things that happened to slaves in the past, different areas, different states and things like that. And they, you know, they show pictures with it, but it was interesting to see, like, and just hear some of the stories, like the accounts, firsthand accounts of certain things that happened to them. And it does have you put things into perspective, you know. They, like I said before, a lot of them, they didn't have a blueprint, and a lot of them made a way. And even, you know, just the things that they endured, you know, it is a blessing that we are here now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because of them.
Right.
That's why we're here. Yeah. Because of them. And so I look to the future. I have a 100-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know where our children will be in the year 2121.
Right.
And everything I do is geared towards structuring what I hope to see.
Right.
It'll be improved, made more accurate by others that come behind us.
Right.
But we're laying the groundwork because our ancestors laid out a foundation.
Right. And we build upon to each generation, I feel like. I feel like that too. Like, they have definitely built a foundation. And I think it's always like the next generation, or we kind of build upon it each time, each go around, I think.
And you know we're doing that.
Yeah.
It's just that because the times we're living in seem so harsh, we don't see our success.
Right.
You know, Black folks say, well, where have we been successful? I said, did you wake up this morning?
That's the first one.
If you woke up, that's your first and most important success.
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, what did you do during your day?
Right.
Because the one thing I've found as I've matured over time, Sister Tamika, the most precious thing we have is time.
Right.
If I could just get that in young people's minds. It's not the sneakers, it's not the money. You can lose all your money and make more.
Right.
Your house can burn down and you can build another. But there'll never be another December 15th, 2021 again.
Right.
So how you spent that day is precious. Use your time wisely. Procrastination is the death of time.
Yeah.
Time, they say. What you're putting off for tomorrow, and I say to people, imagine if somebody could come to you and they say, you know something? You have 3 days to live.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, what would you do? What would you do if you knew you only had 3 days? Now, by the blessings of the Creator, you'll have many more years, so I'm not trying to shorten your life.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that if somebody came and told you you had 3 days to live, what would you do?
Right.
What would your bucket list be? What would you want to do?
Yeah.
And now that I got you thinking about that.
Right, yeah.
Now I say, do it. And live every day as if it's your last. Mm. Not that you're going to die, and not that you have premonitions, and not that you're negative or down in the dumps.
Right.
About accomplishment, about how you spend your day. Because if someone gave you 3 days to live, you would realize how valuable those 3 days were.
You would be counting down every second.
That's right. That's right.
Every second would matter.
That's right. And everything you did, you would be doing it like it's the last time you'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
But imagine if you did those things and you could do it over and over and over again. Why right. waste your life?
Right.
These are the things we have to bring to our children and to help them understand. Because as you mature, you begin to realize things a little bit differently than when you were younger.
Yeah, definitely.
There are things that don't mean anything to you anymore that you thought was the end of the world. And there are other things that you had no regard for that all of a sudden become precious.
Right.
That's why youth is wasted on the young. Because if I could get my mind in children's minds, with all the pitfalls that I may have fallen in and gotten out, all the experiences that I've had, all the joy, the sadness that I've had, and put it in a child's mind for them to understand from their age, let's say the age of 7, wow, what they would accomplish.
Right. They would feel limitless. They would feel they wouldn't have any boundaries, and they could just kind of create and just imagine and just follow through with that every day.
Absolutely. The sky is not the limit. Right. You could go beyond.
Right.
You could go beyond. And you know, the other thing I've come to realize as I've matured is how precious education is. And what an honor it is to be exposed to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a multi-billion dollar business to me.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be the wave now. Everybody's conscious and all these different things. But, you know, it starts to look as if like, okay, who really has the knowledge and who's really, you know, genuinely sharing this because they care, and who's trying to make just quick money because yeah. it's quote unquote trendy at the moment.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we are. You know, we are in a transactional mindset.
Right.
You know, this, you know, Latin, you know, during the presidency of the last president,
mm-hmm.
You know, the words quid pro quo came to our attention.
Yeah.
You know, we define that this for that.
Right.
Like this.
Right.
This and that.
Mm.
It's not a contrasting conjunction. It's a complementary conjunction. It's right. not or, it's and. It's not this or that. It's this and that.
Right.
That's the African mindset. And that's our confusion. Because the original human being, who was African, was able to develop themselves in consciousness 6 dimensions. Dr. Yeah. Edward Bruce Bynum talks about this in his book, Dark Light.
Mm-hmm.
That the first 3 dimensions is what we have, length, width, and depth. That's what mm-hmm. we all perceive, the colors. You know, the rods and cones in our eyes perceive the rainbow spectrum that we right. can understand. Because, you know, really, you know, I told this to a group the other day. They were shocked. They never thought about it. But I told them, you know, the sun is black.
I've never thought of that.
the sun, once you get, see, this is why you see all these folk going up into space, like William Shatner from Star Trek and
mm-hmm.
and Strahan and others that go up, and they come back and they say the moment you go past the boundaries of Earth's atmosphere, everything turns black.
Mm.
because the sun don't shine when you're out there. The reason why the sun is yellow to us is because of our interpretation of the color spectrum.
That makes sense. Because it is true. When you watch anything about outer space, it is all, it's nighttime. Like, it's all dark.
It's all black.
But if you have a huge sun, why wouldn't it be lit up?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And even the stars that you see, it's the same exact thing.
Right.
Because stars are made up of condensed dark matter. Mm-hmm. See, this is what's going on in Shabaka's star. This is what I'm talking to people about.
Right.
That when you get in, you know, stars are formed when dark energy pushes in on dark matter.
Right.
And it pushes in and pushes in so hard that there's no more space in that blackness.
Right.
And it has only one choice. It implodes. And when the nano diamonds implode,
right,
they crystallize blackness and it becomes a star. The same way when you put coal under pressure,
right,
in the earth, it crystallizes and becomes a diamond.
Right.
But I don't stop the story there. Because black folk been put under pressure. And the pressure that we've been put under, Sister Tamika, are making us into diamonds. Human diamonds.
Right.
Because Dr. King told us your character is shaped during times of conflict and controversy.
Right.
Not during times of comfort and convenience.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can do the right thing when it's easy. But only a special person can do the right thing when it's hard. You know, when I was in school, I never called a parent and I never sent a child to detention.
Mm-hmm.
Because I explained to the child, I said, and you know, in their inappropriate behavior or in their having a wise mouth or whatever they were saying to me or doing that made it inappropriate, I said, look, first of all, whatever is going on in this classroom, you and I have to handle this personally.
Mm-hmm.
I have to teach you to do the right thing because it's the right thing. And not because you're afraid I'm going to call grandma.
Right.
Or put you in detention and you won't be able to play basketball after school. We are teaching our children through punishment to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And Sister Tamika, you know what I'm saying. You're in the system.
Mm-hmm.
What I chose to do is not easy. Because there were children that took advantage of that. And I knew they were taking advantage of that. I handled it differently. I had other ways of dealing with them. But for the most part, the great majority of our children came around.
Right.
You know, I say right now, I could call your grandmother and we'll tell you how disappointed she is. I'll call your mama up in here and she'll whip your behind.
Mm-hmm.
I could send you to detention. But I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Because the lesson that I have to teach you, because if I start teaching you to do the right thing because you're scared of what's going to happen, I am preparing you for prison.
Right.
Because then that means that the only reason why you go and do the right thing or follow the law, the natural law, is because you're afraid to go to prison.
Right.
No, you ought to be following the proper law in order to make the society function the way it should. It's not easy. But then I never took it easy anyway. I never took the easy path. There was just something about shaping my character that I always, you know, conflict and controversy, you know. It's just one of those things for any teacher. And you know something else? I think that people, since this pandemic and parents have had to teach their children,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a whole new respect for teachers right now.
There definitely is. I definitely experienced that at my school. Mm-hmm. Parents just showing a lot more gratitude for everything that, you know, we do. Like, I'm school admin, but they just, you know, they realize, like, it's just all levels. It was just a lot. And there is definitely a new attitude towards us, instead of it like, I'm just dropping my child off, we pay tuition, do what we want kind of thing. But I will say that that is true as well. Okay, and so now let's talk a little bit about the sacred geometry and I guess the relationship with mathematics and like science and all of that. I know we kind of just touched on it a little bit, talking about outer space, but I've always been curious to know, in terms of outer space, I feel like when you get high enough in the sky, you have a bird's eye view and you have the pyramids of all of the ancient civilizations, and they were all set up in many different ways, but they were all set up in a pattern that was, I guess, like, I felt like it was some sort of map or something. And even now, I believe it's in Senegal, there are areas where they have mini pyramids. So it's like pyramids, the shape of a triangle, those are all significant in a lot of ways to the ancient civilizations. And they seem to have been like the most connected to what was happening on Earth. And sometimes I feel like what was happening outside of Earth. Do you think that like their relationship with mathematics and with science and all of those different things, do you think it has something to do with that? Even though back then it probably wasn't labeled mathematics, it probably wasn't labeled science or anything, but do you think like their knowledge definitely had something to do with those two subjects?
There's to me, there's no question. The word mathematics itself comes from Ma'at. Ma'at, the double Ma'at, the double feather.
Okay.
Ma'at, Ma'atikos.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ma'at, Ma'atikos, which became mathematics.
Right.
Mathematics, when you break it down and you get into its many subjects, the concept, you ask yourself, okay, what would make somebody? And you know that nature, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so you have to ask yourself, why would human beings have to count? What would be the natural reason? Because you're dealing with a people, many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years ago, that did not have the knowledge that we have today. It's just like an infant compared to somebody who's 70 years old. You know, an infant first born in the world is just using its sensory perceptions to understand the world around it. It cries for attention when it needs something. It doesn't know how to ask for anything. In fact, it doesn't even, the child sometimes doesn't know what it wants, but it does know when it's been satisfied. Whether it be mother's attention, whether it be something to eat, whatever it may be. So you have to ask yourself, in those days of thinking on that level, why would somebody have to count naturally? So you ask yourself, okay, let's break it into genders. Why would a man have to count? What would happen that would make a man count naturally? And you come to realize nothing. But then you say, what would make a woman count naturally? And you come to realize she has a monthly cycle. And she would have to count her cycle in order to prepare for what she was going to do. Which comes to a 28, 29, sometimes 30-day cycle. And in that 30-day cycle, let's say, she finds that her body goes through four different phases. So counting starts with the woman preparing for her life.
That's interesting.
Numbers is the universe. The universe is numbers. Mathematics is the language of science. Technology is the manifestation of science. And engineering is the roadmap that technologists use to reflect the science understood through the numbers of mathematics. We never taught our children that way.
Right.
We talk about STEM.
Right.
But we don't talk about it in its level of understanding. I mean, the acronym says STEM so we can remember. That's great. But the first subject to be identified is math.
Yeah.
Then comes science. Then comes technology. Then...
Right.
Many times, engineering is the language of technology, like math is the language of science.
Right.
We don't teach it to our children in that relationship. We just teach it as separate subjects.
Yeah.
And everything that we know about ancient world, everything that we know about the universe, what we know about the pyramids of Egypt, what we know about the Roman Colosseum, and what we know about Greek structures, what we know about the Chinese wall, the Great Wall of China, what mm-hmm. we know about the mounds of America, all of that we know because of their art.
Right.
So I don't believe in, well, I shouldn't say that. I should say, I think what is more accurate if we use the acronym.
Yeah.
Instead of STEM.
Right.
And that becomes the creative arts. Now, with that relationship, that's going to come, that's advanced. Let's go back to where sisters are just counting numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, let me take you back there now. Because she is going to look up into the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to see that there's a celestial body that also has a 28, 29, 30-day cycle.
Right.
And that it also goes through four phases.
Right.
That's the moon.
Yep.
She's going to realize that sometimes if she is within her cycle, it is possible that the lunar cycle will impact her cycle.
Right.
As it relates to the bodily fluids.
Mm-hmm.
So that just like numbers is the lowest common denominator in mathematics, because what's the first thing that we teach children? Numbers.
Yeah.
When we have in pre-K, we use manipulatives. Sticks, bears, whatever.
Right.
But then we give them siphons and symbols. So instead of having to deal with 10 sticks, I'm going to show you how to do one set, zero left over.
Right.
Which is 10.
Right.
100 is going to be that one stick, but it's going to be 10 sets, zero left over.
Right.
So instead of counting 100 things, now you have a symbol for those 100 things.
Right.
So that's what breaks down numbers. The same way numbers breaks down mathematics. It's like a second to a day. It's the lowest common denominator. Of course, you can break seconds down also. Yeah. True. You look at it just to make things easy. It's the lowest common denominator that can unfold all of the mathematics that you're doing.
Right.
The same way, the lunar cycle is the base of science, because the lunar cycle, every calendar that has been created is based on a lunar cycle.
Right. Yeah.
The lunar cycle is the basis for the calendar is the basis for astronomy, and astronomy is the base of all sciences.
Mm.
So just like numbers is to math, the lunar cycle is to astronomy.
Right, yeah.
And everything else, because of course now we misnomer it in school, we call it earth science, because we're still really focused on our because it's
yeah,
not
it
about,
all about Earth.
Science. It's about astronomy.
Right.
Long before the Earth existed, the universe was there. So that you're dealing with, but I'm going to use the terms that we use in school. We have Earth science, physical science, mm-hmm. and life science.
Right.
But all of them are based on Earth science.
Right.
And earth science is based on astronomy. We don't teach our children this thing. Because in mathematics, when you get into calculus and you start studying integral calculus, when you start studying differentials, there are times you're not even dealing, not only are you not dealing with numbers, you're not dealing with alphabets, you're dealing with symbols. And so that when you look at the development of calculus, you know, I often say, Sister Tamika, I am so, if I were to have a regret, because I always tell people, don't have regrets, but if I had a regret, I wish I had known when I was young what I know now about math and science.
Right.
I wish I had known. But again, all things in divine order. It wasn't meant for me to know it then, because maybe it's my ferocity of teaching it now that motivates it, that had I known it back then, I might not be out here doing what I'm doing in the math and the sciences.
Right, right.
So all things in its place. But math and science, it's true, it's very beautiful. That's the one way you can say it. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematical, and what's interesting is when you get into calculus, okay, let me back up because you asked me a question. So let me build into that what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
From numbers, as we know in school, then you start looking at the manipulation of numbers.
Right.
So it's called number sense. So then you start to add and subtract, you multiply, you divide.
Right.
As you move on, you do the associative property, the commutative property, the distributive property, order of operations. You start moving through all these concepts, right?
Right.
But when you get to high school and you study what's called algebra, or if you want to say algebra, you're still studying the same thing that you studied in the first grade. You're just taking it to another level because now you are introducing letters instead of numbers.
Right.
Because you're dealing with equations.
Yes.
Okay. So when you were in first grade, you learned 1 + 1 = 2. Or let's say 1 + 2 = 3.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to algebra, you take one of those numbers out and you put in an X or a mm-hmm. Y. 1 + x = 3.
Right.
The law of Ma'at says you must have balance. So what you do on one side of the equation, because the equal sign is Ma'at.
Right.
What you do on one side of the equation, you must do on the other side. So you subtract 1 from 1, and on the other side, you subtract 1 from 3. And you end up with x = 2.
Right.
So you're solving. But it's the same thing you did when you were in school. Except when you are young, you're working on the other side of the equation. 1 + 2 =, and then that's left blank.
Right.
But at the same time, you could put an X or a Y there. But we do not teach our first graders and our kindergartens when we're teaching them to add. We're not using the same psychology that we use in algebra. It's almost like it's a totally different subject.
Right.
It's the same exact thing. You look at quadratic equations. If you look at just common equations, if you just look at what you do in algebra, it's the same thing you were doing when you were in the first, second grade. But you've taken it up a notch. And so when you seek the unknown and you find it and you learn how to search for the unknown, this is now all philosophy. We're not even in math class now.
Right.
When you're searching for the unknown and you find it, then you take what you learned and apply it for the reason that you were learning it. And for us in math, it is to measure the earth. Going back to the pyramids and all that, that's mm-hmm. what they were doing. When right. you say to all the pyramids all around the world, they all make different types of climates, but they all are doing something for the same reason.
Right.
So somebody had a master plan.
Yeah.
And whoever built the pyramids in Africa built them in China too.
Right.
Built them in Vietnam, built them in America. The same person brought that technology with them everywhere that they went. So What do we learn sophomore high school? At least that's the way it was when I was growing up. You learn the measurement of the earth, which is geometry.
Yeah.
Geometry. Now, you study geometry, you study the theorems now. So you take theories and create theorems, which are facts. They're mathematical facts. That's what theorems are. If this is this, that is that.
Right.
Theorems. So now you're learning the law of the earth, and you're learning the law of the universe. And the one thing that you learn in geometry is that there is major shape. And by the way, you teach geometry to kindergarten children. Because I taught shapes.
Right.
Triangles, rectangles, circles, squares.
Right.
That's geometry. But we don't connect that geometry of kindergarten in writing, in learning shapes, to the geometry when you're a sophomore in high school.
Right.
But when you study the measurement of the earth, you come to realize that there is one shape that dominates the heavens and the earth. And that's the triangle.
Yeah.
So what's the next, the third year math? Is the measurement of the triangle, or trigonometry, trigonometry. When you master that, trigonometry, then it takes you into a place where the math and the science literally infinitely as you're solving the problem.
Right.
And that's calculus. To calculate. Right. Now you're calculating the heavens and the earth. And this is where you understand that spirituality is unseen science, and science is seen spirituality.
Right.
And calculus can be equated to playing chess. Because on a chessboard, all the moves are constantly determined by the move that you make, and everything changes, but it's determined on your ability to see the future on the chessboard. That's how you play chess.
Right.
By the way, I don't play chess.
I've never played either.
But I know the philosophy behind it. I play chess. There was a game in Africa, in Egypt, that was called Senet.
Mm.
That's where chess came from. Moors brought that game into Europe. There are pictures of Africans playing chess in Europe.
Mm.
And so the same way things literally change as you're moving through the process of attempting to solve the problem, the same thing is happening in the cosmic universe. It's a beautiful thing, Sister Tamika.
Right.
My disappointment is not that they're not teaching our children, because they're not even teaching their own children. That's why they're shooting each other up in schools. They, you know, even their own children have come to realize the big lie.
Right.
They know that they've been bamboozled. They know they've been betrayed by their own families. And so my disappointment comes, if I can say disappointment, is that we have never really been taught the beauty of what it is to educe out of people their purpose in life.
Right.
Because that's what this is about. Education comes from the word educare, which means to educe or to draw out.
Right.
We spend so much of our time in the classroom trying to pontificate and teach. I used to do a lot of questioning. And I used what I call a food technique, F-O-O-D, technique of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
People call it the Socratic method, but Socrates got it from Africans, so I understand it's an African thought process. But the F of food stands for factual questions. See, as a questioner, you have to understand what kind of question you're asking in order to understand what type of response you're expecting back.
Right.
You know, if you throw out a question, you don't. I'm going to give you an example in the second one. The first one is factual. That calls for a yes or no answer.
Right.
The first O is opinion. And it's funny how we ask people their opinion and then we argue with them.
Right, right.
But you ask me my opinion. You have no right to talk to me as different as it may be the way in which I think, and even though I may think that you may have some, what you just told me is your opinion, I think you have some mental issues. Even if I think that, I don't have a right to question your opinion. Because that's your opinion. I asked you your opinion. If I didn't want to hear your opinion, I shouldn't have asked you. And so a lot of times we get into discussions with children when we ask them their opinion, and then we start arguing with them, well, that's not right. But to them, it's right.
Right.
You know, I was sitting in a restaurant. This was years ago. I was sitting in a restaurant, Jack in the Box. It was in Washington, D.C. And just by chance, I heard a man talking. And I looked over at him. And the man's eyes was focused on something just above my head.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking. He was having a serious conversation. And I looked at him, and eventually he noticed that my eyes came, that I was looking at him, and he looked at me.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I know you think I'm crazy, but there is somebody right over your head, and I'm talking to him. Now, okay, Sister Tamika, now I could have argued with him.
Said, I would have.
You know, there's nobody above my head, sir.
Yeah.
But to him, there was. So my question to him was, who is it?
Yeah.
That's what we should do with our children. If we ask an opinion, no matter how outlandish it should be, we should build on that teaching moment to find out why they think. Because you might find out something very important about that child that you need to know for the rest of the school year.
Right. Yeah.
The second O is open-ended questions.
Mm-hmm.
And open-ended questions normally have the word S-E-A in it, C. Some, ever, or any.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gone to Africa?
Right.
That's an open-ended question because there's a response you're expecting back.
Right.
Do you have some concepts of what it is that you're talking about? Do you have any money? Any. Open-ended. And the D stands for descriptive normally answers the open-ended question. So, have you ever been to Africa? Yes, I've been to Africa. Descriptive, describe where you've been. So that when a teacher goes into a classroom, understanding how he or she is going to develop that classroom setting as a questioner to educe out of the children, allow the children to own their own learning experience. Let them feel it. Let them learn it. You know, children, kindergarten, when I first started teaching in New York, I was a kindergarten teacher. And I had children, oh my goodness, Tamika, I don't need to tell you this. If you ever want to know yourself, really know yourself, hang around five-year-olds.
Yeah, definitely. They'll tell you how they feel.
Too pure not to tell the truth.
Right.
They'll be right up. Telling you the truth right there. They'll tell you, they'll read you better than a psychologist will.
Well, their minds are just so, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say untainted or not influenced as much as yet. Yes. And so they're able to see beyond certain things and ask those kind of questions that will be make you kind of wonder yourself, like, oh, well, wait a minute. You know?
That's right. And I went to... Because I really started teaching high school in Gary, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I started teaching there in 1977. But I came back to New York and I started teaching in 2009 in New York. But I started teaching high school. And one of the things I came to realize is something that Dr. Van Sertima told us. Because I went and studied with Dr. Van Sertima in 1984 in Mexico. And the first night, you know, he would do... talk about where we were going the next day. And then the next day, we would have lectures at night to go over what we went through that day and to project where we would go the next day.
Right.
And the one of the first things that Dr. Van Sertima told us in 1984 was this experience is going to clear the nonsense that's been written on the chalkboards of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And between, and I had already been teaching at the time, but I realized then why I got into teaching. The reason why I didn't want to teach high school, because I really wasn't in Gary, Indiana to teach. I was there for a different reason altogether. I had a different type of job. But right. while I was there, a teaching job opened in Gary, in a black, in an all-black high school, Roosevelt High School. And so I started teaching there because my job was in the evening and all. So I didn't have to, teaching didn't impact my schedule. And so I started teaching there. And I had a phenomenal relationship with my students. Just really very powerful. Changed my life. The students changed my life again.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when I decided I was going to leave my occupation and I was going to become a teacher. And people thought I was crazy because I was making five times the amount of money
right.
in my previous occupation than teaching. So the man made me write a letter of resignation because he said, ain't nobody going to believe me if I told them that you resign from this position for what you're going to do. So you got to write a letter of resignation. Otherwise, they'll fire me.
Right.
But what I came to realize is that I wanted to get to children before the nonsense was written on the chalkboards of their mind. Because a lot of the high school students had a lot of nonsense.
Right.
Their fault. It was their environment. It was the teachers they had before. And I said, if I can go into 5-year old, if I can become a kindergarten teacher, this was before pre-K. If I can become a kindergarten teacher, and this is when kindergarten was half day, by the way. Kindergarten became whole day while I was a teacher.
Right, right. And so it evolved for you.
Yeah.
But at the right time. Yeah.
Exactly. And I was right there on the cusp of special ed, the Lauer decree and the public law. I was mm-hmm. right there with bilingual education. 1979, there's serious changes occurring in the education system, particularly in New York. Fundamental. Bilingual ed, special ed. I was teaching when there was no special ed in the school.
Right.
So that I became a kindergarten teacher so that I could be that taught them who they were.
Right.
And I get, like with Instagram now and with Facebook, I get contacted by my students. Right. And see, they knew me as Booker T. Coleman. They knew me as Mr. Coleman. They didn't know me as Kaba Hiawatha. But they'll contact me and say, you know, I saw this movie called Hidden Colors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy there called Kaba Hiawatha Kamene. And Kaba looked just like a teacher I had at CES 229. Is this the same person? And I'll respond back.
Right.
Because they know my face, they know my voice.
Right.
But they don't know the name correction. But the other thing is, and this is something that I know you've experienced, and as you move on in your career, there is nothing more meaningful in my life than for a student to contact me and tell me I made a difference in their life.
Yeah. That's special.
That is so special, my sister. I know people that get bonuses at Christmas time for thousands and thousands of dollars. But I value those comments from my students more than all the money that you might get if you work on Wall Street. My bonus is when students let me know. I used to teach my children Kiswahili, and I taught them like 9 words and the 10 numbers. Jambo means hello. Kwaheri means goodbye. Bawana means Mr. But I made it into a song, very simple song.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to teach my children that song all the time. And I was walking in the Bronx on Grand Concourse. And as you probably know, the Bronx, like I know Brooklyn, it's like Eastern Parkway.
Yeah.
You know, yep. One of those broad boulevards.
Right.
And I remember I was walking, crossing the street, and I heard in the background, faintly, I heard Jambo means hello. Kwaheri means goodbye. Moana means mister, and Bibi means miss. And I turned around and I saw these students waving at me.
Wow.
They were in high school at this time.
Right.
But I had them when they were in the first grade, maybe second grade. And I stopped and they came over and boy, they were just happy to see me. And they said, we didn't remember your name, but we remembered that Kiswahili song.
Right.
And we knew if we sang it, we'd get your attention. That tells us something, my sister Tamika, about how our children yearn, they crave for knowledge and wisdom. They want to know this.
Yeah.
They remembered that song. And they sang it the way I used to sing it.
I think with kids too, because they have a certain level of innocence, it they also they have an easier time to tap into their creative side. There was a video I had seen of yours on YouTube about how imagination is success. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to it, and that's one of the things that I noticed you had, I think, talked about in the video. It was a short video, but you talked about how, like, your imagination is just success because it doesn't limit you, it doesn't put you in a box, but it's also a point where, like, you're really tapping into yourself. And so that's it's titled The Spirit of Success, Your Imagination. I think that is something that, you know, is true, I think, especially with children. And I think it also is prevalent, like, when you become an adult and you realize how you want to shape your life and how you may not want to be the typical adult, but, you know, success isn't determined by that. It's determined mostly by your creativity or how you can really look within yourself. That kind of reminds me of that video clip when you were talking about, like, the children and how they picked up on that Swahili, and just from it being in song form, just because children pick up that song piece, like that creative piece, because that's their imagination. It's the part of them that I think that's the most, it's still pure to an extent.
And very simple, and I don't sound like Luther Vandross. So the children said, you know, if Brother Coleman has enough nerve to sound like that, I could sing. So it made everybody comfortable to sing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't come off like I had, you know, a phenomenal voice. I just sang like I sang. You know, and again, you know, these are the little things that you can do with children that bring them to points of understanding.
Right.
And they're just ready to make this happen. They are just ready to make this happen, my sister. And it's just something that we have to start to do. And if I may just say one more thing about sacred geometry.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
The concept of sacred isn't the way in which we perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
Sacred is that which you hold true to yourself, that which you have made part of yourself.
Right.
Like when you talked about imagination, I've seen a quote by Albert Einstein that says, imagination is better than knowledge.
Yeah.
Because once you know something, you know it. That has its place. That's good.
Yeah.
But imagination is what takes that knowledge beyond the stars.
And somewhat intuitive, in a sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And intuition is the process of your soul.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. That I can see that connection too with that that sacred piece and that geometry piece and the study of the earth and the universe, you know, tapping in with the calculus and just how it's somewhat intuitive for us as well.
Absolutely.
If we dig deep enough to find that connection and really kind of, like you had mentioned earlier, like rescue it and
Absolutely.
Put it out there for us.
And to my sisters, you got that intuition. That's why it's called Mother's Wit.
Right.
You got that. That intuition is what brought math into existence.
Right.
The word was made flesh. Your thoughts became your codification. You made it happen.
Right.
You solidified it.
Right.
And as we go into this age of Hapi, or what we call Aquarius, this is a feminine energy. And it's time now for that feminine energy. And I'm a man, but I have a mother.
Yeah.
And so half of me is a female energy.
Yeah.
So when I talk about a female energy, while it predominates the female gender, I'm not saying this to leave brothers out. I'm just identifying leaving a male-dominated structure, the age of Pisces. And we're moving into the age of Hapi, or what is called Aquarius, which is the age of the woman.
Right.
And so, sisters, get ready, because to whom much is given, much is expected.
I feel like this is a time too where your intuition, speaking of that feminine energy, that intuitive piece, that intuition piece, and really having that that kind of guide us as a collective for things that we need to do.
That is it.
Yeah.
That is it. And you know, Bob Marley has a song, Natural Mystic. And he says there's a natural mystic in the air. If you listen carefully, you will hear.
Yeah.
Could be the first trumpet, might as well be the last. More will have to suffer. Many more will have to die. Don't ask me why. There's a natural mystic in the air. But yeah, we will succeed.
Right.
And that's what we have to understand. And I tell this to young people all the time, because Sister Tamika, as you know, every day you see this. One of the things adults do not interpret the way children do. Adults yeah. don't understand what you say around them. You got to be careful. What they are watching on TV, when they're watching news casts and they're hearing things, you have to talk to them
yeah.
about what they're experiencing. How do you feel about yeah. what's going on? We have to let our children know. We've been through much worse before. We'll get through this. Yeah. Maybe it's going to be all right. We have things we have to do. True.
Right.
There's a lot that we have to do, but this will be all right. This will solve itself. But we have to do something about this. We have to give our children an understanding. I'm not saying to give hope. I'm saying drop facts on them.
Yeah.
We've been through worse.
Yeah.
We'll get through this. Together, we'll get through this.
Yeah.
We have to tell our children this. We have to tell each other this, to tell you the truth. Because some adults they're really freaking out about what's going on. But, you know, hey, black folk have lived with a virus for over 400 years. And we have vaccinated ourselves from it.
Yeah.
And it's called self-love.
Mm-hmm.
That's our vaccination. We've loved ourselves so much, we have been able to chase the invading organism out of our system, little by little. Some of us still got it in us.
Right. Yep.
By matter of degree. Sister Tamika, I still got some in me. How could I not, living in this society?
Right.
The question is, how much does it... That's the point. And right now, once I recognize what it is, it don't control me no more. But sometimes it's controlling me and I don't know it is.
Yeah.
It's just the way life is. You know, I'm a human being. I'm exposed to this stuff out here. But it'll be all right. It ain't over till we win. We just right. got to keep on keeping on. And if I may just encourage your community of listeners to go to my Instagram at Kaba Kamene, KABAKAMENE. That's my community bulletin board. That's where I put up a lot of my information. You can go to my link and you can get a lot of my different materials.
Yeah. I was going to say I did. I received, I signed up on your website and I received one of the webinars, I believe it was. And
okay.
It is a lot of information,
mm-hmm.
but it's great information.
Yeah.
And I think the breakdown of it, the layout, I think it's a great resource for everyone to have. Mm-hmm. And something that should be shared within our community. I feel like we really should be the ones circulating our history.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If it is to be, it's up to me.
Yeah, exactly.
It is up to us to do this, my sister. Right. Tamika. It's up to us to do this.
Yeah.
Don't depend on anybody else outside of yourself. You do it.
Right.
You do it. And do it well.
Right.
Because our children are depending on this. Our children are our future. And I am preparing for a group of children who may never have experienced me.
Right. Yeah.
They may never have known what I did in 2021. But in 2121, I pray that the work that I do will have some way, just like William Leo Hansberry's work, mm-hmm. has impacted us.
Right.
He died in 1965 at the age of 71, born 1896. And everything that he does is replicated by much of the work that I try to do. This brother right. lives through me.
Right.
Okay, 100 years later, give or take.
Yeah, I often think about that too, like in the, you know, way down the line in the future, like my descendants, yeah. what will I leave behind for them?
Yeah.
That is somewhat historical, whether it's historical directly to family, like my family, mm-hmm. or society, but for our people, what is it that they'll come across that will be that like inspiring piece of history to want to keep them going?
Yeah. And that's an aspect of your soul.
Yeah.
An aspect of your soul is the memory that you leave behind for those that remember you. How they call your name, how right. they recognize you, what they say about you. Oh, my great grandmother told me about.
Yeah.
And they're talking about you. Their great grandmother is talking about what you did for them as their great grandmother.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to think in those terms. And I also invite your family to go to my website.
Mm-hmm.
www.kabakamene.com, KABAKAMENE. And you can download my free e-course and my study guide.
Yeah, yeah.
My study guide is the most valuable document I have.
Right.
Dr. Clark once told me that you may not reach your destination, but if you leave behind the right roadmap, mm-hmm. those that come behind you will.
Yeah.
And I think about that frequently. And this study guide, 44 pages, this is my roadmap.
Right.
This is where I'm headed. And if I am graced with a life that can unfold all of that, that's wonderful. But if by chance I should be called to the ancestral realm before I get to do that,
right.
that's my roadmap. And that's why it's free.
Yeah.
Because it's the most important thing I've done. It's priceless. And I just want the community to have it. And then out of that comes all of the other information that you might want to get as it relates to the work. And then I'm on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel. And you just Google my name as information. But we're working. And I just thank you for this opportunity to be with your audience and to be with you to talk. We educators have to stick together.
My yeah.
sister Tamika.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. And this was great having you on and just chatting about these things and also just hearing your thought process, you know, behind some of your works. And I believe that it's true. You know, it is, like you said, like a roadmap for mm-hmm. those that come after us, our descendants, so like a yeah. blueprint of some sort of foundation. And it is up to us to preserve it and make it available for them.
Absolutely.
So they have it, and they have it from us where it hasn't been tainted or, yes. you know, messed with or any kind of thing like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, then it matters because they'll see themselves in this.
Absolutely.
And they'll want to take more care of it. So thank you for being on the episode. We didn't talk about a few other things, but that's okay.
Well, it gives us a reason for me to come back.
Yeah, we'll have to have you come back and we'll talk about, there's a webinar that you did put out that I do want to watch. It's called the Hidden Signal in the Four Metaphysical Frequencies. And that's something that I want to listen to and kind of tap in about. But thank you for being on the episode. And everyone, thank you for tuning in and listening. You want to follow him on Instagram and go to his website and sign up for the webinars and the quibinars and the day one, the word intro, the pre-words, and the breakdown of linguistics and things of that nature to really help you understand just more of a foundation of where you see more of our African practices. So
yeah, and my books are on Amazon. So you can go to Amazon for them. And my sister, Tamika, I also would like to congratulate you and thank you and let you know how proud I am of the work that you're doing.
You are a change agent.
You are shaping our future.
Thank you.
And I appreciate and respect from a person that knows what it takes to do what you're doing. Congratulations, my sister.
Thank you. Keep on keeping on.
You're making a difference. And we're proud of you.
Awesome.
You're doing great work.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm receiving. So thank you for that.
No doubt.
I never think of it that way, but yes, thank you.
Oh, yes. So. Oh, yes. There's no question.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for being on the episode. And as always, family, I hope that you receive something from this and the new thought process. And until next time, everyone, peace.